Good evening and welcome to Hour 3 of Blue Gold Radio on WUEC 89.7 Eau Claire. Coming up this hour, we have Blue Gold Radio news from Glenn and the rest of the news team. Then we have Country Hopping with Courtney. We are going to hop over to Latvia this week, and we are going to follow that up with some Latvian music brought to you by Elizabeth in her international music segment. After that, we have sports with Tyler. We're going to check in with how the Blue Golds did this weekend. Then we'll have our Person on the Street segment chatting about student organizations. After that, we'll hear from Triple Threat with Nick, Austin, and Ellis from The Spectator. And that'll be followed by our last segment of the week, Everything Eau Claire. This week, Eddie chats with Chris Jorgensen of the LGBTQ Resource Center here on campus about the Fireball. And after that, I'll have my event pick of the week. So here's Glenn with the news.
Hello, and thank you for listening to Blue Gold Radio News. I'm Glenn Olson. MyCon's downtown budget theater will be reopening soon, with new options and new space. Raina Beutel has that story.
Lights, camera, and wrecking crew. That's what it may look like. But in roughly 3 weeks' time, MyCon's downtown cinema will soon be again open to the public. The theater, known oftentimes as the budget theater, has been on an extended Thanksgiving break, but budget owner Dan Olson says the budget is coming back with some big changes in store. Along with necessary changes like adding a handicap accessible bathroom, Olson says the theater will seat less people in exchange for table seating, more food options, and the sale of alcohol. Olson says the remodel was long overdue.
This place was just kind of stuck in the times. I don't think it had really been touched since like mid-80s. All our other locations have been updated, and so it's just time to do it.
Olson says although they don't have a beer license, they're still able to vend alcohol and serve to guests. He says seeing alcohol in theaters is becoming more and more common.
Yeah, any like new build theaters now will basically, you know, have a bar in it or a 21 older section. And so we've kind of modeled it after there's a theater in downtown La Crosse that's very similar, and they allow, you know, beer and wine in there. So we thought we'd give it a try.
And with new changes come the opportunity to target a new crowd. But Olson says they're only in it for the cheap flicks.
We're a college town and we're kind of, you know, right by the campus. But I think not only the beer and wine, but with adding the kitchen and other food offerings, pizza and sandwiches and that sort of thing, I think we're just trying to attract all customers, the same people that we've always, you know, tried to bring in, just offer them, you know, different options.
Okay. Olson says he's not entirely sure what day they'll be back in business. And as for what movie they'll play on opening night, Olson says that's still up for debate.
For Blue Gold Radio News, I'm Raina Beutel.
A UW-Eau Claire materials science professor was recently named a Regents Scholar for her research on nanoparticles. Brianne Leger reports.
UW-Eau Claire materials science professor Jennifer Dahl was named a Regents Scholar and received a $50,000 grant for her research. She says it's a great feeling to receive support on such a large scale for her research on nanoparticles.
With the Regents Scholar Award, What that tells me is that other people are starting to believe in the science as well and the possibilities for this technology.
Dahl is the only assistant professor at UW-Eau Claire to be named a Regents Scholar, and her main concern is controlling where nanoparticles will reside. She says this research will lead to new business development in electronics, medicine, and greener technology like solar panels.
We can use our nanoparticles as so-called backside reflective materials that will manipulate how light interacts with a solar cell when it strikes the surface.
Dahl led recently named Rhodes Scholar Tayo Sanders III on a research project during his freshman year. Sanders will be pursuing his doctorate degree at Oxford University in the fall.
Incredible thing that's happened is that, you know, this is how he functions in the lab, and so this is also how the rest of my research students function in the lab. He does a really awesome job, and everybody else rises to that same level, and so they all work together as a really coherent team.
She says having master's level research opportunities for undergraduates makes for students who will be more competitive in the job market. As for what's next for her research, Dahl says she is working to get more sophisticated with how to manipulate nanomaterials so that information can be developed in the field of green technology, electronics, and medicine. For Blue Gold Radio News, I'm Brianne Liga.
A new recycling program at UW-Eau Claire has made strides in student awareness in its first semester. Kiri Salinas reports.
Back in the fall, UW-Eau Claire Housing and Residence Life started a partnership with WRAP, otherwise known as Wisconsin WRAP Recycling Action Program, to help reduce plastic waste in Wisconsin. After a semester of working with WRAP, UW-Eau Claire has done many different things, including teaching seminars on recycling plastic, collecting plastic and packaging on move-in day, and partnering up with Recyclemania. By having such events, it has shown that recycling plastic is a bigger deal than some would have thought. Housing Sustainability Coordinator Kate Hartzell says that working with WRAP has really opened some students' eyes to the problem.
So one way it's impacting students, I think, is just making them aware of how many plastic bags people use. So my goal is not just to recycle the bags, but to maybe get them to not use those bags at all.
Along with collecting plastic, they also created a program called SEED, otherwise known as Students Encouraging Environmental Deeds, which helps educate students more on recycling. SEED offered a program called Plastic May Not Be So Fantastic, where they taught students ways to stay away from using plastic bags all of the time and switch to reusable bags. Besides just helping the university, the partnership has also helped people in the community.
We're working with a nonprofit organization called REACH, and REACH works with differently abled folks and provides them jobs. So when our plastic leaves here, it goes to them, and then they put it into even bigger bales, and then they're the ones that are actually selling it to the company Trex, and so they make the profit off of it.
The partnership with WRAP has made many appearances throughout the university and through the community. With the main focus being put on housing and residence recycling, Hartzell now hopes that they will eventually grow.
We've already moved from just collecting within the residence halls, and eventually we'd like to expand it out so that we're collecting plastic from all over campus.
So far, this partnership has done a lot to make students aware of recycling plastic and the dangers it can cause. Hartzell says there is plenty more that students can do to help keep our university clean. Kiri Salinas, Blue Gold Radio News.
The annual two-day drag race and fundraiser at UW-Eau Claire, the Fireball, finished Saturday, donating its portion of proceeds to the charity for this year, the Campus Harvest Food Pantry. Simone Foster has that story.
The Fireball Drag Show has become one of the most popular events on the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire's campus. It showcases a number of local drag performers as well as renowned performers from the reality TV show RuPaul's Drag Race. This event raises money, which goes back to the Eau Claire students in full. It funds students to engage in social justice activism through events and or trips. It gives to the Harvest Food Pantry, which helps college students meet their needs by providing food and toiletries. This event also gives scholarships and many more. This year's drag show was held in the Eau Claire Davy Center Ballroom, which reeled in roughly 1,400 people Friday and Saturday. This is a huge jump from when Chris Jorgensen, Women's and LGBTQ Resources Coordinator, began the show 4 years ago as a small production. Jorgensen says,
I wanted to create something that wasn't just a drag show. I didn't want to create an event. I wanted to create an experience that had the potential to actually contribute much more to the campus than just entertainment, right? And I think entertainment, for entertainment's sake, can be really important when it's something that can be as potentially divisive as drag. Mm-hmm. But I wanted it to have a more substantial impact. I think people don't like to be uncomfortable. And so I think oftentimes when people are presented with something that makes them uncomfortable, they try as quickly as they can to distance themselves from it. What I think the Fireball affords is an opportunity to be entertained, which allows us to keep them in the conversation longer. So they can experience something that chances are they have a very strong feeling about, whether they've had any experience with it, right? So drag is one of those things that people feel very strong. It can be very polarizing. Mm-hmm. But there's so many people who think ill of drag who've had zero experience. Mm-hmm. So the Fireball allows an opportunity to demystify it, to let them know that this can be an incredible time, and that, you know, playing around and deconstructing gender is not such a scary thing.
Not only is Fireball about the entertainment and having fun while raising money, but it also contained a message that speaks to a number of people all over the world, which is suicide awareness. Students displayed their support by wearing t-shirts that said, "No more suicides." Looking further, Jorgensen plans to continually gain a bigger audience each year in hopes of creating a better experience for Eau Claire students and the the community. Blue Gold Radio News, I'm Simone Foster.
That's all the news for tonight, but we'll be back next week with more campus and community news. For Blue Gold Radio News, I'm Glenn Olson, and you're listening to 89.7 WUEC FM Eau Claire.
Thanks to Glenn and the rest of the news team for that check-in with Blue Gold Radio News. You're listening to Blue Gold Radio on WUEC 89.7 Eau Claire. I'm your host for the hour, Courtney Kippers. And next, we are going to move into my segment, Country Hopping with Courtney. Every week, I sit down with an international student or somebody at Eau Claire who has studied abroad. This week, I talked with Lota, who's studying at UW-Eau Claire from Latvia.
My home is in Riga. But okay. I study in the university 2 hours away from Riga.
Okay. And where, give me a little geography lesson on where Latvia is. Like, what are your neighboring nations?
My neighboring nations are the two Baltics.
Okay.
Lithuania mm-hmm. below us and Estonia on top of us. And we're located in Northern Europe.
Okay.
So the top. Across the Baltic Sea, we have Finland, Sweden, Norway.
Okay.
To or... our east, we have Russia.
Okay.
And, yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, so when you were growing up, or even now, do you do a lot of, like, transnation travel? Do you go to, like, the nations around you a lot? Is that pretty common to do?
Yeah, it's really easy to travel in Europe.
Uh-huh.
And my dad lives in Norway.
Oh, really?
For the past 5 years, yes.
That's cool.
So I do travel to Norway when I can. Uh-huh. I have been there. There's a lot of traveling in, like, the region I mentioned. I have been to Finland, to Sweden, a couple of times to
okay.
Sweden. And, of course, that Lithuania and Estonia. Estonia has these islands, Saaremaa.
Okay.
And those are really, really, really good and really cool.
Cool. Very cool. So tell me a little bit about your hometown or where your university is, whichever one, and tell me kind of what it's known for, what the culture is like there.
Well, Riga is the capital of okay. Latvia, and it has 700,000 people.
Sure.
It's one of the biggest cities in the area, and obviously the biggest city in Latvia. It's very urban for Latvia standards.
Okay.
But we have a lot of parks that which I adore. I think Riga is very famous for its parks.
Okay.
And we have a lot of old architecture, most of it German 13th century style.
Cool.
And yeah, we have a lot of it was historically Riga was a market center. Mm. For the Baltics, because we have access to the Baltic Sea.
Sure.
So both Russians and Germans and Polish and Swedish and everyone else who has been ruling us over the years
right.
have used that access to the Baltic Sea.
Sure. Sure. So have you found in your time in America that Americans know a lot about Latvia? Have you, like...
Not really.
Okay.
Well, the people who know about Latvia know a lot.
Okay.
But the majority of people don't know where it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually start from, do you know where Finland is? And if there's still a blank space, then I say, it's in Europe. So that's good enough.
So among the people who kind of know a little bit about Latvia, are there some like misconceptions that you find that they think about Latvia that aren't true necessarily?
Well, usually people, the first question is it near Russia?
Okay.
And I think because Latvia was part of the Soviet Union for 50
sure.
years, there are a lot of perceptions of what Latvia is like based on Russian stereotypes, which for me as a patriotic Latvian that really, really knows the struggle of the nation under the occupation
mm-hmm.
Is a little bit offensive. But
sure.
I know it's just because people don't know. So I try
right.
to educate them and tell about the occupation and how we, all three Baltic states and basically well, all states under the Soviet Union, tried to sustain their culture and their language. And
sure.
So, yeah, there's a lot of explaining to do in terms
yeah.
of we are not Russia and we're not connected to Russia other than being Maybe. Under...
Yeah.
Being neighbors and being under Russia, being under Soviet forces for 50 years.
Yeah. That's kind of neat that you get the chance to kind of tell that story, though.
Yeah.
And kind of spread that education. So did you have grandparents or great-grandparents or parents who were kind of under the Soviet Union? Do they talk about that time in your country?
Yeah. Yeah. We talk about it a lot.
Okay.
It's the main thing we study in.
Sure.
Yeah.
In school.
In history in school. Uh-huh. My parents grew up in the Soviet times, and they experienced the collapse of the Soviet Union.
Oh, sure.
And I was born 2 years after that.
Okay.
So my grandparents experienced post-war and Second World War, World War itself. If you speak to a Latvian, they will usually have at least one relative that has suffered from the Soviet forces. For example, the exiles to Siberia and the labor camps.
Yep.
So both my grandparents from my mom's and dad's side, they have suffered from the Soviet forces a lot. And there was a lot of superstitions and a lot of kind of angst and fear.
Yeah.
For example, in my mom's family, that you couldn't talk about politics at home, because her grandfather, my great-grandfather, thought that the Cheka, which is the spies that spy on like the inside of the country, that they're listening all the time, because he had been in this labor camp.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Each Latvian has a relative that has suffered the Soviet occupation and just suffered in it.
Yeah, and so that's something that's pretty common to talk about now, though? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. So you said, you know, as a proud Latvian, is it, you know, kind of something in your country to have kind of a lot of, you know, patriotic spirit for your homeland? Like, is that pretty common?
Yeah, I think it's very common, especially because we have such a rich folk culture.
Uh-huh.
For example, every 5 years we have a song and dance celebration.
Awesome.
That has 11,000 dancers on one stage dancing at the same time, just making these these patterns, and it's amazing. And like 15,000 singers on one stage, and we have this very rich folk culture, and we have our national celebrations like Midsummer Festival, where we stay up all night and have like fires and jump over the fires, and we have a lot to be proud of, and especially because we know how it is to not have independence.
Yeah.
We really fight for it, and we want to make the best of it.
Yeah. So are you missing home? Is it hard to be here?
Well, it's been 6 months.
Okay.
And it's been a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
But I am looking forward to going home and really having my Midsummer Festival. I miss that the most. And yeah, being home, having people around that know my language.
Yeah.
And just...
Do you miss speaking the language?
Well, I have opportunities to speak the language a lot here because there's three of us here. Because the scholarship we gain is geared towards students who are very patriotic. Mm-hmm. And every year there's three Latvians that come here.
Eau Claire?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Especially Eau Claire. And we go back and kind of give what we received back to Latvia.
Yeah, that's got to be great, because it would be weird to not speak the language for that long, I would think.
Yeah. Well, I do Skype a lot with my parents and family and friends. So it's not lost, but I find it really weird how easily I switch now from language to language.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's great. So how is university in America different than your university experience at home? Are there some obvious differences there?
Well, if we're thinking about content, not that different.
Mm-hmm.
I would say our education is very Western-centered.
Okay.
And a lot, like, mostly all of the resources we have are published in the U.S.
Sure.
and the researchers we look into, and for example, in sociology, we'll look at race issues and issues that are, I think, very specific to the U.S.
Okay.
I'm not saying that Latvia doesn't have racism, but we don't have, there are no visible groups that are of different rides that are bigger. So in terms of content, not so much. The universities here are bigger.
Oh, okay.
They're more expensive.
Sure.
Back at home, we have a lot of state scholarships that you can really, really get into. And just in general, the education here is more expensive. So I just admire people who really want that education and take up that really, really heavy load of loans.
Lucky us, huh? Let's see. So what have been kind of some of your highlights here in America? Are there some moments that stand out as kind of the best moments?
Well, I've done some traveling.
Cool.
So I really love exploring the U.S. because it's just so different and you have so much to see.
Thanks, Lota, for joining me on Country Hopping with Courtney. Lota is from Latvia and is studying for the academic year here at UW-Eau Claire. So next we are going to hear some Latvian music with Elizabeth.
Hello, and you're tuned in to Blue Gold Radio on WUEC 89.7 in Eau Claire. This is Elizabeth, and you're tuned in to music from around the world. Thanks, Courtney. And this week we're going to Latvia, and we're going to be listening to some folk music, a Latvian composer, and a cappella music. So I hope you guys enjoy, and thanks for tuning in. The first song that we're going to be listening to is from the Latvian Nationwide Song and Dance Celebration. And this celebration is held once every 5 years. So the last one was in 2013, so the next one will be in 2018. And this is a clip from one in 2008 in Riga, which is in Latvia. I hope you guys enjoy, and thanks for tuning in. I hope you guys enjoyed the clip from the Latvian Nationwide Song and Dance Celebration. The population of Latvia is only about 2.5 million, so it's pretty incredible that they're able to have this celebration and that it's so big, because people come from all around Europe to listen to it. So the next music we're going to be listening to is from the Latvian composer Pēteris Vasks. This song that he wrote is a cantabile for string orchestra. I enjoy it very much, and we're going to be listening to this song longer than we normally listen to some of the other clips. So I hope you guys enjoy. It's very harmonious and nice to listen to. So enjoy, and thanks for being tuned in. All right, I hope you guys enjoyed listening to Cantabile for String Orchestra by Peteris Vosks. It's a nice change from some of the other things we've listened to here on Music from Around the World, definitely. We're listening to a lot of singers and sometimes, and this is a nice change from what we've gone through in the past here on Blue Gold Radio. So the next music that we're going to listen to is the featured music of the week, and it's a little off the beaten path as well. It's an a cappella group called Cosmos, and this is actually really popular in Latvia right now. This song is called Vindo, and I hope you guys enjoy. It's also a nice kind of change. So after this, the next program on is Sports with Tyler, and I hope you guys enjoy that, and thanks for being tuned in to WUEC 89.7 Blue Gold Radio.
Thanks, Elizabeth, for your segment and for the Latvian music. Next, we are going to move into sports here on Blue Gold Radio on WEC 89.7 Eau Claire. We will check in with Tyler on how the Blue Golds did this weekend.
Welcome to the Blue Gold Sports Recap on WUEC FM 89.7 Blue Gold Radio. I'm Tyler Henderson. The Blue Gold men's hockey team split two games with UW River Falls on the opening weekend of the WIAC tournament, but were unable to move on after losing 2-1 in the deciding minigame. On Friday, the Blue Golds lost 4-3 after giving up a 3-1 lead, allowing three goals over the final two periods. The following night, however, the Blue Golds were in control, scoring the final two goals of the match to win 4-2. Taking 48 shots on goal versus the Falcons 33, Eau Claire used a two-goal night from freshman TJ Stunts to force the minigame. River Falls native Ross Anderson put the Blue Golds in the lead to start the minigame, but River Falls tied it and then scored the sudden-death goal to win. The Blue Golds have likely played their last game of the season, but have a slim chance to get a bid for the national tournament. After a successful season that saw the Blue Gold women's basketball team claim a 2-seed in first-round bye in the WIAC tournament, Eau Claire faltered in the second half against UW Oshkosh, losing 65-36. Going into the break, the Blue Golds were only behind by 3 points, but they came out flat in the second half, getting outscored 38-12 in the period. The Blue Golds finished their season with a 16-10 record, 11-5 in WIAC play. The Blue Gold men's basketball team also saw their season come to a close this week. Following an exciting overtime win in the first round against UW River Falls, Eau Claire fell short against the first-seeded Whitewater Warhawks, 82-60. After jumping out to a 14-11 lead in the first, the Blue Golds were outscored 26-8 in the rest of the first half and never recovered. The Blue Golds finished their season with an 11-16 record. In other news this week, the women's hockey team ended their season with a loss against River Falls. Men's tennis beat Carthage College, gymnastics took third at the UW Lacrosse Triangular, and the indoor track and field team took second place at the WIAC Championship. Stay tuned for more Blue Gold Radio, WUEC FM 89.7.
All right. Thanks to Tyler Henderson for that check-in with Blue Gold Sports. Next, we are going to throw it over to Jenna Vandazan for her Person on the Street segment. This week, Jenna talked with students about the student organizations they're involved in here on campus.
My name is Jenna Vandezand, and this is the Student Opinion segment on Blue Gold Radio. This week, we will hear opinions from students about their involvement in campus organizations. Students I talked to were either unaffiliated with an organization or were really excited to talk about their involvement with their student group. Mass Communication major Nicole Vanderplas talks about her involvement with PRSSA.
Okay, so I'm in the PRSSA organization, which is Public Relations Student Society of America. I've been in it for a year, and I'm a mass communications major, so with an emphasis on public relations, so it's the PR club on campus. That's why I joined it. I really wish I would have joined. I've been a PR major since sophomore year, and I didn't really know as much about the organization, and I kind of didn't want to join it alone kind of thing. So I just joined it recently, and I'm so upset I didn't join it earlier. It's an awesome organization. We've gotten to do, like, we have speakers that come in all the time and talk to us about agencies and corporate PR. We do workshops, which we get help from, like, career services and stuff like that, and other faculty members that have really good information for us. And then we do, like, agency tours, which have been super cool to, like, get out there and actually see different agencies and how they run. But, yeah, it's just a really good group of people, and I love being in it. So it's probably, like, my favorite thing on campus.
Music education major Forrest Clevin Peterson talks about his involvement in various music and dorm organizations.
Yeah, well, I'm a part of the Blue Gold Marching Bands. I joined that organization, mainly because it's one of, like, the biggest Division III marching bands in the country, and it's just a great time being there. I'm also part of the Statesman. That's a really fun time, too. We have to do that as a music education major. You know, we have to be part of the Statesman our first year as a guy, and that's a lot of fun. You really get a sense of brotherhood with that, along with singing with a great choir, one of the premier groups on campus. And then I'm also a part of the Murray Hall Executive Board, which is a really good community in Murray Hall that helps plan events, has things for its residents, such as spaghetti dinners, pancake breakfast, things to get community within the residence halls.
Social work major and recent alum Libby Richter talks about her involvement with political and human welfare organizations.
Okay, I'm Libby, and I'm a recent alum, and I was actively involved in Advocates for Choice, College Democrats, and Student Senate throughout my college career. Student organizations were an amazing part of building my leadership skills and being a part of something bigger. It was amazing to have a group of people who believed in what I believed in and had the same passions and were wanting to support what I wanted to support and help make a better world.
Tune in next week for more student opinions about current events, pop culture, and happenings around campus. I'm Jenna Vandezand, and you're listening to Blue Gold Radio on 89.7 WUEC FM Eau Claire.
Thanks, Jenna, for your Person on the Street segment. You're listening to Blue Gold Radio on WUEC 89.7 Eau Claire. This is hour three of your broadcast, and I am your host, Courtney Kippers. Next, we are going to pass it over to Triple Threat. Triple Threat is hosted by the members of The Spectator this week, Nick Erickson and Austin May. The Spectator has been the official student publication of the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire since 1923. 91 years later, it's the same name with a different style. The Spectator will be bringing you exclusive online as well as multimedia content throughout the week on spectatornews.com to complement a print edition every other Thursday. Don't miss out on the most up-to-date campus news. Check out The Spectator on paper racks across campus, as well as at spectatornews.com. Here's Triple Threat.
Hey, Eau Claire sports listeners, here on Triple Threat on spectatornews.com, as well as Blue Gold Radio 89.7. As Timon and Pumbaa said in The Lion King, so sadly when Simba met Nala, our trio was down to two, and that is the case today, as Mr. Ellis Williams is off humbly accepting a much-deserved award at the WNA conferences. So it's just myself, Nick Erickson, and Austin May with you today. Don't have an athlete guest with you, but we're going to run down some really exciting time for Blue Gold Sports, the WEAC tournaments, NCAA tournaments coming up. Austin, I'm sure excited about them. Let's start with men's basketball. A huge kind of a program to find and win Tuesday night at UW River Falls, the first time they were in the conference tournament since 2009. Fell in the hands of defending national champion and number one UW-Whitewater last night in really what wasn't a very close game at all. But Austin, kind of give me your takeaway from these last couple of weeks here, the Blue Gold men's season, and a little bit about this tournament and where they can take the, you know, what they gained the last couple of weeks here in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a ride, that's for sure. I mean, the team started off having a pretty good start to their season, but, you know, their loss of Adam Jelter just, I mean, a lot of, there's a reason to be nervous, and having at least the on-the-court leader down with injury, that puts the rest of the team in a little bit of a tougher position, but they were able to grind it out and get to the tournament. But with last night's loss, I mean, it's all for nothing at this point.
Absolutely. You know, I think one big thing for them, you know, I know that Ellis, who's the beat writer of this men's basketball team, talked to Coach Seiberling after an early season loss, and they're really trying to figure out who their score was with, as you mentioned, with Adam Jelter out. Tyson Killeen really stepped up, the transfer from St. Cloud State, and Coach Seiberling told Ellis that we need to find somebody else to score the basketball besides Tyson, and I think that was really the key down the stretch. They were able to find some other people. You'll have guys like Eric Efforts, who we had in the studio, had a couple of big games. Jacob Kohner, the big man, had a couple of big games, kind of found some stroke from the outside. Then you look at Tuesday's game. George Diekelman, I believe, had 16 points against River Falls for a freshman point guard in his first ever WIAC tournament game. I mean, that's a big time performance, and you know, so they were able to find that, and it's just too bad that, like you said, that they weren't, you know, able to really have that full team together with a backcourt of Tyson Killeen and Adam Jelter. I think would have been really dangerous, but you know, at the same time, you have to look at kind of the big picture and where this program was. You know, three head coaches in 3 years, not that long ago, haven't made the conference tournament since 2009, to get in the tournament and win a game. And then, you know, obviously Whitewater is UW-Whitewater. They're 23-3 for a reason. They won the national championship last year for a reason. I think they have the best player in the country in Cordell Young. He's there for a reason. I mean, at the end of the day, talent just, you know, wins in a playoff setting. And that was the case last night, but I think still a heck of a run for the Blue Gold men. So,
yeah, and from the Whitewater team, you got to give KJ Evans some credit, going 11 of 18 yesterday shooting. I mean, a great effort from Whitewater. They ended up, I mean, final score of that game was 80. I think it was 82-60.
Yeah, wasn't really close. Yeah,
yeah. It's too bad that the Blue Golds weren't able to pull it out in this one. But I mean, like you said, it's cool to see, you know, production from players like Diekelman, and hopefully that's it's a good sign for the team moving forward. Hopefully we'll see him in the tournament next year, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talk about how big experience is, you know, guys like Diekelman and you know, Jared Schneiderman, some underclassmen getting some big time minutes and you know, in big games. That can only serve well for the future. All right, we're going to move on. Women's hoops, big game tonight in Zorn Arena, 7 p.m. against UW Oshkosh, a team predicted to win the conference at the beginning of the season. The Blue Golds have knocked them off twice this year. Blue Golds clinched that number 2 seed. They got the first round by Oshkosh. Had to play Wednesday. So, you know, who knows how much of a tired legs factor that's going to be for the Titans coming in tonight. Let's just talk real quickly, Austin. You know, we've seen the Blue Golds beat Oshkosh twice this year. A lot of times you see that third game, you know, it's hard to beat a team three times in a year. What are you going to be looking for out of the Blue Gold women tonight to make sure that, you know, that happens and they don't fall into that statistic that seems to happen more often than not, that a third time around the team that lost twice gets them?
I mean, I think as far as production on the court goes, I mean, the team's been doing everything they've had to do lately. They've been all, the players have been gelling really well together, and I think they've been shooting pretty well. But I think the main thing is it's all a mental game at this point. I think they know where Oshkosh was ranked at the beginning of the season. They knew how important those games were this season that they beat them in. I think they just need to, I'd say, keep the mentality they had before, but maybe just to a certain degree try to forget about it and just try to think about this as just another game. I think if they put too much pressure on themselves, I could see a team cracking in a situation like this, especially with, you know, knowing that how hard it is to sweep a team during the season.
Big key I'm looking for here tonight is this bye, and I talked with Coach Engelin earlier this week. This bye really gave her two top players, Courtney Lewis and Teenie Lightfoos, who both lead the league in their 1-2 in minutes played in the WIC. I mean, just a couple extra days rest for those two, because she's going to depend on them to play 40 minutes, you know, essentially tonight and hopefully Sunday as well. I think the extra day of rest is really going to be crucial for them. Take some fresh legs, you know, get up sky a little higher for those rebounds. You know, move your feet just a little faster on defense. And a big key that I'm looking forward to tonight is seeing what Oshkosh coach Brad Fisher does in terms of adjustments, because the two times that they have played them, his team has really been stumped by that 2-3 zone that Eau Claire plays. They have a lot of I mean, they can shoot pretty well from the outside, but Oshkosh is kind of like the Blue Goals, in which they like to, you know, work inside out, where they like to get the ball in the post and back out to their shooters. With that 2-3 zone that the Blue Goals play with, you know, you have 4 6-footers on Coach England's roster. It really makes it difficult for those outside shooters, you know, for those inside players to get touches and to get clean passes out. You know, the outside kind of forces some tough shots, really kind of grinds out in the shot clock. So the Blue Goals have won a lot of low-scoring games this year. I know Oshkosh is very good defensively, but they also like to run up and down the court. So it's going to be really interesting to see if Coach Fisher, you know, makes some adjustment, flashes some players up to the high post, you know, get the ball up high, make some passes, try and get those Blue Goal bigs into foul trouble. I think if it turns into a guards matchup, you know, the Blue Goal guards are very good, but I don't really see an advantage over Oshkosh. But if they can, again, control the paint like they have the last couple of games against Oshkosh, I see Eau Claire advancing to the conference championship game, in which I believe they'd have a big advantage over Superior as well. I think they're a better team than UW Superior. So I think if the Blue Golds can get past Oshkosh tonight, I really think they have a great chance of winning the conference tournament and going to the NCAA tournament, and what an exciting time that would be.
Yeah, I would have to compare it to the last few seasons in the NFL, how some analysts have dubbed a few of the last NFC championships games as the true Super Bowls. I think that's what fans of WIAC women's basketball can see this week. In my opinion, the two best teams competing in the tournament. And I'm excited to see it, how it turns out.
7 p.m. tonight, Zorn Arena, pack the house. It's going to be a great time. Well, speaking of national tournaments, Austin, let's turn this one over to you. Men's hockey kicks off the WIAC tournament, of course. A little recap of what happened last year. The men's hockey team, defending national champions, won the WIAC tournament, somehow still didn't get into the NCAA tournament. Coach Lowen's on the committee now. Perhaps things will change. But Austin, why don't you give us a little rundown of what you're looking for out of the Blue Golds against UW River Falls here Friday and Saturday at Hobbs?
Well, I mean, people have used that phrase in sports often about it's hard to beat a team three times. They've already done it. This is going to be time number 4 and 5 this weekend with the two-game series. And I guess the thing I expect first is I expect a lot of penalties. In the last game, there were a combined, I believe it was 46 penalties from both teams. A lot of chippy behavior going on out there in it, and that's fine. They want to win. Both teams are really competitive, and I think there's a little bit of bad blood, and so that's always fun to watch in hockey. As far as River Falls goes, I mean, this season, their overall record is actually better than Eau Claire, but with the head-to-head wins and just the WIAC wins on the side of Eau Claire, they secured the second seed in the 4-team tournament. River Falls will be coming to Eau Claire tonight and tomorrow at Hobbs Ice Center at 7 p.m., and the year before, River Falls got the first seed. They won the WIAC in the regular season, and they ended up losing to UW Superior in their 2-game series in the semifinals. So Eau Claire was able to host Superior to win the WIAC title last year. But yeah, in the new format the national championship is a very competitive tournament in hockey. Only so many teams can come. And when you get in the range that Eau Claire is right now with 6 losses, 3 ties, it gets a little gray. Because, I mean, is the talent there for a national title run? Yes. There are analysts on the East Coast that are covering those teams that would agree that Eau Claire, that Stevens Point, they both have the talent. But, and I meant River Falls, Superior, or Stevens Point, actually has, I believe, only 3 losses on the season and 1 tie. So they are... if they can run through the tournament, they should be in good standing for a bid. If Eau Claire was able to still win the WIA tournament, that's when those losses and ties really come in to perhaps bite them, because considering all the conference champions at that point, there's a chance that they might be the conference champion with the lowest overall record, which is not good enough to get a bid too often enough. But to go look at the game in a preview sense, like I said, I expect it to be really chippy, but I expect it to be a good game. There's no other way to really say it. I think there will be fights, but I think there will be a lot of focused players putting the blinders on and just trying to, you know, make the best they can. River Falls has a handful of seniors. I don't know by name off the top of my head. Eau Claire just has 2 seniors this year, but they are 2 seniors that were on the team for the national championship run, both team captains, Ross Anderson and Jack Callahan. And I think I mean, talking to Ross earlier this week about it, I mean, he's focused in. It's pretty, I mean, his whole week, his school, his social life, it's all been secondary. It's all been just about prep for these games coming up. This is really big for the Eau Claire team, and they want it. They want it really bad, and they know how hard it is to just beat a team as good as River Falls three times in a year. They know it's most important for them to make sure to win Saturday. They obviously want to win tonight as well, but if they weren't to win, they still hope to win Saturday night, carry that momentum into the mini game to secure their spot in the finals for the WIAC title. But if you want to see more of the game, you're going to have to go to Hobbs this weekend.
Absolutely. And real quickly before we sign off of this portion here for Blue Gold Radio, we also just want to mention that the WIAC track and field championships are underway. Blue Gold men certainly have a decent shot of bringing home a title, although UW lacrosse, always a tough powerhouse to bring down. Thurgood, Dennis, Roger Steen, kind of the two names to look out for in terms of winning championships there, as well as Josh Thorson on the distance side. Women's side, defending national champion Carly Fahler, I think, will have a good performance, and I think she's a name to look out for as well in the sprints. But that's, in a way, like I said, a big weekend of WIAC playoff-type type performances out there. Definitely go check them out. And definitely stay with us here on SpectatorNews.com and Blue Gold Radio for recaps of those games. We'll hopefully get some reaction from athletes as well. So for this portion for Blue Gold Athletics and your Blue Gold Update of the Week, this is Nick Erickson and Austin May signing off on Blue Gold Radio. SpectatorNews.com listeners, we'll be back briefly for some discussion on the Badger men's basketball, Chicago sports fans, some NFL free agency, and a topic to be named later. See you later.
Thanks to Nick and Austin for their segment of Triple Threat. Next, it's time to move into our last segment here on Blue Gold Radio. We are going to move into Everything Eau Claire. This week, Eddie sits down with Chris Jorgensen. Chris is the director of the LGBTQ and Women Resource Center here on campus, and he talks with Eddie a little bit about everything he does at his job, things he's hoping to accomplish, and the fireball which happened this weekend on campus. Here's Everything Eau Claire.
Hello, this is 89.7 Everything Eau Claire, and this is your host, Eddieberto Sanchez, and today we have Chris Jorgensen with us.
Well, I do quite a bit. The office, I think, is poised to do lots of different work on many different levels across the university. So what that means is, as the title suggests, I advocate for both women and the LGBTQ community on campus. And that can manifest itself in such ways as presenting to different classrooms or different colleges by request. That could mean I invite speakers in. We do panel discussions. We also invite very well-known people in so we can draw larger crowds. We also program and plan large-scale events, both in conjunction with national observances like National Coming Out Day or National Day of Silence or Every Body Day, those sorts of events, and other events that we just feel are specific to our particular campus. So in addition to all of that, we also run a handful of training programs that we utilize across campus, such as safe space training. Such as the bystander intervention training for sexual assault. We have Start Smart training, which is a training program that teaches college women to negotiate for benefits and salary to address the wage gap, right? So we do all of those sorts of things. And then, of course, administratively, you know, I'm having lots of conversations with the people on our campus that have been targeted to actually affect change so that we can make sure that UW-Eau Claire is a welcoming and inclusive and safe and exciting experience for not just women, but the LGBTQ community in general.
Right, and you mentioned that you do a lot of events, and by the time that this airs, the fireball is already going to happen. So can you tell us a little bit about the fireball?
What exactly? Sure. Well, hopefully it was a good time. you know, the fireball, you know, since I created it, has been dragging me along behind it. It's taken off very quickly on campus, which is a shock, really, to someone who knows that drag is incredibly polarizing to many people. People feel very strongly about drag and drag culture, whether they have any experience with it whatsoever. So the fireball offers a few things. One, it offers an opportunity to experience what drag actually is. A lot of people have a lot of misunderstandings and misconceptions about what drag actually is. So this offers an opportunity to learn more about it. It's an incredible time. It's really exciting. It's really fun. But importantly, all of the proceeds that are collected from the Fireball, whether it's ticket sales, merchandise sales, or drink sales, go right back to the students. So the Fireball has allowed us to expose the university and greater Chippewa Valley to a very particular and often maligned form of entertainment while raising funds for social justice, which is really, really important. So because of the Fireball, after this year, which is its fourth year, we have been able to raise approximately $40,000 to fund the office itself and student efforts to engage in social justice activism.
And I've seen, like, sometimes, like, I've gotten in the past previous year and some years, and sometimes I see, like, these little signs where it, like, helps other students to go, like, the civil rights pilgrimage and other things. Like, what other things can it, like, help students, like, achieve, like, with that extra money that you guys make?
Well, what's great about it is that the sky's the limit. We're able to fund what other sort of opportunities students are bringing to us. Right. So as an example, the civil rights pilgrimage, if students wanted to go on that but couldn't afford it, we make sure that they can afford it if we're able to. If students want to experience the San Francisco Travel Seminar, the LGBTQA travel seminar that results in the O'Queer Film Festival, but can't afford it, we help them afford it. If students want to engage in social justice activism, whatever it looks like for that student, we really don't have any barriers or any stipulations what that might look like. But if they find an opportunity that they want to experience, want to engage in, but can't afford it, then my position is I don't want lack of funds to be any reason why people don't engage in social justice activism. So we'll do whatever we can with the money that we raise in the Fireball to actually help, right? So beyond just that, we also will be creating scholarships for scholarships, as most people understand them, for incoming LGBTQA students, right? So that's important because right now there's no mechanism by which we track incoming LGBTQ students. Nationally, there's a trend to kind of allow that, where certain institutions can ask incoming students to self-identify. We are not one of those institutions yet. We're in conversations to actually make that happen. But if we can tie incoming students to specific scholarships, then we can, in essence, keep track and foster their way through the university in a really positive and meaningful and ultimately, you know, beneficial way, not just for themselves, but for the university.
And is this what you had in mind when you first started the Fireball? Like, you started working here and it's just like, I want to create this huge event. What's...
No.
Like, no?
No. You know, many people have the same sort of experience. But when I was 19 and I had just come out on this campus, my experience that I couldn't wait to be around was the bar. Right? Oftentimes, that is what the focus is for students who are really young, who come out and they don't know what it's like to be around community, meaning being around people who know what it's like, right, to be lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, or gender nonconforming, etc. So what I wanted was I wanted to create an experience where people could have that sense of community but not have to go to a bar to get it. Right. And I'm not maligning bars. Some gay bars actually do wonderful things for the LGBTQ community. But I wanted it to be a really safe environment, environment that they were familiar with, right, which they are with the campus. So I wanted to do that. But I also wanted to replicate just all of the really good memories I had of drag performers when I was 19. And oftentimes it's the people that are the most conspicuous, like drag queens, who end up taking young, scared, you know, freshly out LGBTQ people under their wing and kind of introduce them to the culture as it is. So I've only had amazingly positive experience with drag culture and the people that I've known. And so I wanted to replicate that here. Now, did I think it would be that successful? I hoped for it, which is why the Fireball for me is an experience. It's not just an event. It's a frame of mind. It's not just an event. But I am continually shocked at how successful it's been here.
What has been, like, the reaction from, like, the students versus, like, the community, like, having this huge, like, Fireball event on campus?
Sure. Since I became the director of the Women's and LGBTQ Resource Center, I have always prepared myself for backlash. I would always have, even sometimes, you know, a course of action to take should something happen at any particular event. I can say, though, that I have not really received backlash with the events that I've done, the Fireball included. I think
some of the best way to actually educate people is to ensure that they are entertained, that they are paying attention, because then education seems fun. They may not even know that they're being educated. So with the fireball, I just haven't received much negative feedback. No, of course, if you read the comment section, if anything, as far as publicity is concerned, you'll always receive a bunch of negative stuff. But I really think that's the exception to the rule. I think a lot of people don't want to be ignorant. I think a lot of people don't want to be bigoted. For those that go out of their way to be ignorant and bigoted, I just don't have time for them. But for the people who, really want to do better for the LGBTQ community, who just really don't understand but go out of their way to go to an event like the Fireball, to understand an aspect of a culture they know nothing about, then that's really why I think the Fireball was created, right? Mm-hmm. But from the community, from the campus community and the greater Chippewa Valley, honestly, I think you can gauge the reaction by ticket sales, which are incredibly robust as we head into our fourth year.
Well, another thing, since we're talking about drag queens, can you explain to the people out there who've never heard of the term drag queen, or have ever heard, like, seen a drag queen, what exactly is drag?
Sure. I think you can have a couple definitions for drag. I mean, I think it depends on the drag performer you're asking. RuPaul quite famously said, you're born... What you say? You're born naked, and the rest is drag. Absolutely, mm-hmm. And really, in essence, that's true, right? Because our gender expression is not a simple thing. It's so ubiquitous and so common to us that we don't even think of them as choices. But when any person gets up in the morning, how they style their hair, whether or not they wear makeup, what shoes they wear, what clothes they wear, these are cultural affectations by which people can judge their gender, right? Or can ascertain, if not judge, their gender. And so drag really, in its essence, is a performance of gender. Gender isn't something that is natural in the way it's expressed. I think it's really constructed. And so drag deconstructs the often limiting notion of gender as being either a man or a woman.
Thanks, Eddie, and thanks to Chris for joining us on air. He obviously puts a lot of work into the Fireball, and that's a pretty cool thing that we offer here on campus. If you're looking for something to do next weekend, there is an opera taking place here at UW-Eau Claire, The Marriage of Figaro. You can come down and check it out on Friday evening. It starts at 7:30. For more information, you can go to uwec.edu. Thanks for wrapping up your weekend with us here at Blue Gold Radio.